This is Pat Cummins, this is Australia.
A magical moment in Australian sport has been achieved by one of our greatest sporting teams.
You are unique and you are special, Nick, because you are here on the Boundary Rider podcast, back for another episode, season 3, episode 5. Nick Savage, how are you today?
What an introduction, I'm flattered. Locke, I am cherishing Freedom Day. How did you spend your first day out of lockdown yesterday?
Oh, I mean, I thought about getting a haircut. I mean, I've got the one that I've got at the moment. I'm like, no, might just let it grow out a bit. Then I saw the queues for some of the barbers here. I mean, they were longer than some of the other places I thought were going to be going nuts. So I'm just going to keep it rocking. I had a pretty quiet day yesterday. Didn't change up too much. Just going to maybe wait until that 80% just while everyone kind of clears out a little bit more. What about yourself?
Well, firstly, don't cut those locks. They look fantastic. And secondly, I went to the office for the first time in 3 to 4 months or so, which was fantastic. It wasn't on my little laptop in my bedroom working for once. So a very nice change of pace. But we are very close to the WBBL, which I'm getting very excited for. Some T20 cricket on our screens and obviously plenty of Ashes chat to get through as well. And Sheffield Shield, IPL, it's all happening in the world of cricket.
Yep, Nick has covered pretty much all of it there, and we're going to be talking through it all from Dan Christian, the really disappointing abuse he's copped online after Bangalore were knocked out of this year's IPL, to Cameron Green hitting sixes for fun back in WA Premier Cricket and videos going viral. So plenty to get into this week. Make sure if you haven't already, hit us up on social media, the Boundary Rider podcast, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We'll try and keep things busy and interested around there as the summer heats up. We've got merch as well, so the link to that will be down in the show notes. And Nick, let's take it back to the international cricket played on our shores. Australia-India T20 series. It finished off 2-0 to Australia. They won the matches on both Saturday and Sunday after the Thursday game was washed out. It means they take that multi-format series 11-5, which really is a scoreline that I think flatters them in the end. India put up a great fight and should have probably come away with a fair bit more throughout the series. But at the end of the day, Australia got the job done when it was needed. Was there anything in particular out of those three games that caught your eye?
Well, we spoke about last week how we thought India were going to go into this T20 series with all the momentum on their side, having somewhat dominated the test match. And it looked like that was exactly what was going to take place in the first T20. Mostly thanks to Jemima Rodriguez, they were on track for a pretty big total in the first innings. But then that Queensland weather once again intervened and was washed out, which is obviously really disappointing, because then Australia did obviously take control of those final two games and take a very flattering 11-5 lead in the series, which obviously it wasn't that one-sided throughout the whole 3 weeks or so of competition. But the big takeaway, Talia McGrath, I mean, she's been out of the Australian system for 3 or 4 years or so. And importantly, she probably wouldn't have even gotten a game if not for Rachel Haynes's injury woes. But she did get that opportunity and obviously has really impressed not just the Australian selectors, but the Australian cricket public with her all-round capabilities, being one of Australia's highest run scorers at the bat and a couple of really important bowling stints as well. So yeah, she was certainly the highlight for me in this T20 series, contributing in both of the games.
Without a doubt. I mean, it was a performance that we've kind of been waiting for McGrath to kind of produce, that she's been in and out of that Australian side for the best part of 5 years now. So for her to really establish herself is really positive with both bat and ball. I think obviously bat is where she really proved herself, but throughout the series bowled well also. I mean, I just want to say that I predicted Australia would win the last two and it would be a 2-1 in the T20 series. And if it wasn't for rain, it would have been a perfect prediction. But yeah, for the most part, I thought it was it was an interesting T20 series, but again, it was one of those things where once it was kind of clear that India couldn't win the series, it kind of fizzled out a little bit again. And it's one of those things that we just have to kind of get right with the balance of the multi-format series, I think, because obviously there's talk around for the Ashes series that the test match will be played first, and which I think is a good thing because there's obviously more on the line. But then that contributes to later down the line, some of the matches not being as meaningful and not playing as much of an impact. So it's an interesting sort of balancing act, I think, just to kind of find, okay, what game should be played when, how many points should they all be worth? And I think it's something we're still figuring out as hopefully And fingers crossed, we see Australia involved in more of these multi-format series in the years to come.
Absolutely. I think leading into such a big year that is 2022, regardless of the scoreline, there won't really be a dead rubber because they are leading into a Commonwealth Games. I think there's also a T20 World Cup next year. So I think England will still cherish every opportunity they can to play against Australia. But spot on about getting the balancing act right with that multi-format series. How about that delivery from Shikha Pandey? Is it ball of the decade?
Ball of the summer.
Ball of the summer. Oh. Yeah, I think early contender, certainly.
I can't go. I mean, technically it is an early contender for ball of the decade. If we're going purely the last 10 years, there is no beating Ryan Harris to Alistair Cook for mind. But if we're looking at this decade, that yeah, potentially there's that. There's maybe a little tricky Matt Parkinson in there somewhere as well. But yeah, it was certainly a rip-snorting delivery. And I mean, Healy couldn't do much about that.
I mean, out of the hand, if there wasn't any movement through the air off the deck, it could have potentially been a wide on the offside. But then it was almost reminiscent of some of Megan Schutt's new ball spells. It just swung in enough and really decked in off the pitch. It actually hit middle stump. It didn't even clip top of off. It came back far enough to hit middle stump. So, and rightfully, that blew up on social media, a stunning ball. But the other peculiar incident of that series was Meg Lanning, she's becoming the first Australian woman in T20 cricket to be out hit wicket in the third T20.
That was just wild. I mean, it's not something you expect from Meg Lanning, who I think when she looks back on this series, we're disappointed that she, besides that first ODI, she really wasn't able to make the most of her chances. So, yeah, it's not something you see much in cricket. I mean, I guess she was looking fantastic and it showed that she was moving her feet a fair bit, which is nice. But yeah, it kind of just summed up Meg's series in a way, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've held Meg Lanning to such a high standard over the past decade or so, especially in short format cricket. And so to see her not necessarily contribute as much as we'd expect was a bit of a shock to the system. Same with Elise Perry in the T20 games as well. She had a pretty quiet series. But with that hit wicket, I did tweet that it was very reminiscent of Peter Handscomb's hit wicket at the SCG test in 2017, also playing a cut shot to hit his own stumps. Of course, he was on 110 at the time, I think, so slightly different outcome in that regard. But yeah, what did you think about the fact that Elise Perry didn't get a bowl in that third game? There was concerns from the Channel 7 commentary team that Perry may have been injured, but no, coming back from the dugout, there was no injury concerns. There was just simply too many bowling options and they didn't think Perry was needed.
Well, first off, I do want to congratulate Elise on becoming the first Australia's most capped female player of all time, bringing up 252 matches across all three formats. I think that is a quite incredible record and it deserves to be celebrated the way it was over the weekend. For me, I think you're right. It definitely just felt like Lanning had a lot of bowling options and felt she didn't need to go to Perry. I think it speaks to, in T20 cricket, it's almost, maybe it is time we let Elise, just in that format in particular, focus on maybe just locking down that 4-5-6 role in the batting order somewhere there and just going, okay, try and just be that stabilizer, that finisher. But yeah, I guess as a cricket watcher, as a fan, there is a concern about in T20, you need someone in those positions who's going to up the strike rate. Does Elise offer that? If she's not bowling, what does she offer? But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that she definitely has a role to play in that T20 side at the moment. But with so many performances, like someone like Atali McGrath, that she's next to undroppable now in that Australian side for at least probably the Ashes, I think. On the back of that series against India, she was easily Australia's best player. That's why she won player of the series. She could probably cement a 5 or 6 in all three formats in that game. And at the end of the day, does play a kind of similar role to Elise Perry. So I guess it's just about how you juggle the side around to accommodate both those players in the team.
So I guess when Rachel Haynes does return from injury, who makes way? Is it McGrath? Is it Nicola Carey? Is it Perry? Or does Haynes not find a spot back in that side? What are they going to do when the Ashes come around?
I think Haynes will definitely come back into the side just because of how in form and how much of a class bat she is. I think Harry is maybe the one under threat in the shorter formats. Just because she's that sort of seventh batter, the sixth, seventh bowler, and that's always going to be the one that's most under threat. When it comes to the test match, I mean, I think Haynes obviously comes in at the top with Healy. Then you've got Lanning, Perry, Mooney, Gardner, McGrath. That, yeah, it's going to be interesting that one of those all-rounders might be the one most at... Oh, no, rather than the all-rounders, one of those bowlers, obviously playing Stella Campbell and Darcy Brown in that test match. I feel like Australia wouldn't lean that way in the Ashes, especially if they can bring someone like Rachel Haynes back in. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out, because it's a great headache that Matthew Bond and the selectors have now with Talia McGrath, because she's gone, hey, don't forget me, I'm here, I can be your player of the series, I can be your match winner on multiple occasions, pick me in this team. So she was someone who you and I went, okay, that's interesting. She's got a central contract last year. She's fully shown why in this series.
Yeah, 100%. I think the WBBL is going to be massive in that regard, just for the players to show who's in form and who is actually going to contribute in the Ashes, because I feel if someone like Perry or Carey or even McGrath, if they don't put in the performances together, they could miss out on that starting 11 for the Ashes. So, yeah, obviously that starts Thursday, first game down in Hobart. We've spoken before about how the first few rounds are going to be down in Tasmania. And I think most of the games are actually going to be on Fox Cricket as well, if not all of them. So that's a really exciting bit of news for the WBBL. Locke, should we chat a bit of Sheffield Shield action?
Let's get into it, because it was, well, it looked like a really exciting game between Queensland and Tasmania. Obviously, Tassie got to 500 and declared in the first innings on the back of some fabulous centuries from Tim Ward in just his second first-class match. And I think Jordan Silk's eighth first-class century, which was really good. He picked up the tempo well. I think we've seen him develop a lot as a batter in the last 2-3 years in particular. He was someone who Sydney Sixers fan kind of maligned for quite a while in terms of his strike rate. But I think we've seen in the last, especially two seasons, he's picked that up a bit, and there's a big reason that they've gone back-to-back in the competition. But he's also had really good red ball form for Tasmania. Then I guess for Queensland, we had a star-studded Queensland lineup, and it was Bryce Street, the one who really impressed with Queensland with a century, and then Jimmy Pearson came in with a quick fire century as well. Usman Khawaja really put the game on the line, declared well below Tasmania's score, I think about 140, 145 runs behind it was, and really put the tempo back in, or put the game back in Tasmania's hand to go, all right, go on, you take it on. And instead of an exciting result, we kind of saw Lawrence Neale-Smith come in and do a fantastic job. I don't think anyone's blaming him. He clearly got instruction to go, okay, you're coming in as a night watchman. Just take your time, build your innings. And then I think on day four, it took 30 or almost 40 balls for him to score his first run of the day. So it was pretty clear that on that final day, Tasmania didn't want to throw that result away. I mean, look, in my perspective, if you're playing in Adelaide, you can't throw a result away in the final day. There's no collapses to be had. But Tim Ward spoke on that final day, after that final day, saying the decision was made just to go out there and keep batting and make sure we didn't lose this one. It was made at the start of the day. We thought it was going to be too hard to take 10 wickets, and it was our job to go out there and take as much time out of the game as possible. Let's quickly hear what Usman Khawaja had to say about this, because he was far from pleased, and then I want to get your thoughts on it, Nick.
Yeah, a little bit disappointed. I mean, we declared as soon as we had the follow-on, we declared, hoping they'd set us a chase and then we'd try to chase it. It's always going to be hard to, it's always going to be hard to get, you know, lots of wickets on that. So it had to be sort of a declaration, a sporting declaration, and then get them to set us a total and us try to chase it down. Really, that was the only way there was going to be any result. They obviously didn't want to play that way, so that's just how it was. Awesome. Yeah, I was actually quite surprised, because I thought they were just going to, because the openers came out with quite good intent, so I thought, all right, they'll put on a few quick runs and then send us in tomorrow, and then they send the 90 out, and I was really rattled. I was like, wait, I'm confused. I thought they were just, yeah, that, you know, that was the game plan. It is what it is, as I said. Can't do much about it.
You can completely understand where Khawaja is coming from. I mean, he took the initiative to declare so far behind. They basically just avoided the follow-on and then sent Tasmania back into bat. But you can also sympathise with the Tasmanian tactics. I mean, why risk a defeat when it is such a lacklustre match, when you know, they're happy with the points on the board in the Sheffield Shield ladder. They got the draw, and you can understand that tactic. But the commentators were frustrated, cricket fans were frustrated, pundits were frustrated, because we want the Sheffield Shield to be exciting. We want it to be a competition that cricket fans can get around, and we're already a month into it, and we've only had two games, both of which were comfortable draws, which is quite frustrating. But at the same time, there are still a lot of things going against the players. The pitchers this early in the season are roads at the moment down in Adelaide, and hopefully we'll see a bit more variety and a bit more something else for the bowlers as the season progresses. Certainly by March, they'll be very bowler-friendly, you'd assume. And we can't forget that also they can't shine the ball with saliva still. They still have those COVID restrictions in place. So for the bowlers, for the Kookaburra, that swing is pretty much gone after just a handful of overs. And we did see some photos posted by our good mate Barat of players actually shining the ball under their armpits, because they can only use from the neck down to shine the Kookaburra at this stage. So at this stage, although it is irritating, you can understand why it is so one-sided and batter-friendly, but the fact that there have been something like 9 centuries in 8 days of Sheffield Shield cricket is pretty irritating. It's not a great look for the competition, but certainly that'll change over time.
I thought one in particular, Merv Hughes, took to Twitter to say, "Disappointing last day. I've got to say, I'm very disappointed in Tassie's approach to the game." Tassie all in caps. Interesting. I don't know if we can read into that much. "Anyone can teach people to bat and bowl, but at first class level, we have to teach people how to play cricket." Tassie, all in caps again, had the perfect opportunity to do that today, in my opinion, didn't. I mean, he's not wrong there, Merv. You are not wrong there at all.
But we did get to see Joe Burns and Usman Khawaja roll the arm over. So there is always a silver lining to these sort of situations. Any chance we get to see Usman Khawaja bowl is a pretty good day in the world of Australian cricket.
This is very true. All right, we're going to take a break there. Then we'll come back with a bit of a wrap-up of what's happening in the IPL. Look forward to the T20 World Cup. And then also some exciting Ashes news is on the way. As we're recording this on Tuesday, the IPL is down to 3. Chennai, they're through to the final. They're waiting to find out who they'll play on Saturday, and that will be either Ricky Ponting's Delhi Capitals or the Kolkata Knight Riders. But first off, we have to look at Monday night's game, where Royal Challengers Bangalore said goodbye to Virat Kohli's captaincy, said goodbye to Maxi's heroics, and thankfully, probably for Dan Christian, he said goodbye to a tournament he'd probably rather forget.
Yeah, I don't think he reached double figures with the bat in about 5 or 6 innings, which is a bit of a shame for him. He did actually have a couple of incredible games with the ball, really tightening up the batters and not giving away a lot of runs. But unfortunately, in this, I suppose it's a qualifying final, he bowled 2 overs, one of which was extremely expensive. And then he also bowled right at the death, I think defending 7 runs. And he actually bowled really well in that final over, I felt. But there was just that one streaky boundary, which just made it sort of impossible to defend from there. So they are knocked out. And as you mentioned earlier in the pod, really disappointing to see abuse on Christian's wife's Instagram. A lot of cricket fans venting their frustration there, which is, needless to say, not the platform to do so. Good that Maxwell and Christian have called it out. And also good to see a lot of Indian fans taking the time out to actually apologize to Christian's wife and actually trying to flood the comments with love hearts and messages of support as well. But I think we've spoken about this before. We're pretty sick of seeing all this abuse on not just the players, but their friends and family as well on social media. There's just no place for it at all. But I guess regardless, sad to see we won't have any more Maxwell in the IPL. But I guess hopefully he can take the momentum onward into the T20 World Cup, which is just a couple of weeks away, less so.
Well, one team we have to look at is Chennai Super Kings, who continue to perform year after year in the IPL. And this time it was on the back of some MS Dhoni heroics. But we can't forget Josh Hazlewood. He played a big part in their win to get through to the final on Saturday.
Hazlewood's not a typical modern day T20 bowler, and that he relies a lot on just consistency in line and length. A lot of the, I guess, modern T20 pace bowlers rely on variation, Yorkers, slower balls, all that kind of jazz. But Hazelwood is just consistently putting on a length and relying on his natural swing and seam to find the edge. And that's exactly what we saw in that qualifying final the other day. But yeah, MS Dhoni, I mean, what is he now, 40 years old? He's still the magician when it comes to run chases. I mean, no matter what the situation, it feels like the Chennai Super Kings can chase a target when Dhoni's at the crease.
Just quickly on Hazelwood, where does he sit in your pecking order, I guess, for Australia's bowlers going into the T20 World Cup? I mean, he's had the most match experience going in, so he's probably looking the most in form.
No, absolutely. I guess it'll depend a lot on the match situation, in that if Australia wants more than two strike pace bowlers, Hazelwood would probably be next in. I still think Stark and Cummins are ahead of him in the pecking order just because of the class and experience they have in T20 cricket as well. But depending on if they think Mitch Marsh is enough of a third choice seamer, I feel like Zampa and Agar will be playing pretty much every game as the strike two spinners. And I guess from there is, what other bowling variation do you want? They'll have Maxwell and Mitch Marsh. We assume Maxwell and Mitch Marsh in the starting 11. And there'll be one more spot, presumably, for a bowler. Will it be Hazelwood? Will it be Swepson? Will they go for Kane Richardson? Not too sure. But in my mind, he's probably the third choice strike pace bowler at this stage.
You've probably kept your eye on the IPL a little bit more than I have. What have you made of the pitches? There's obviously been a little bit of talk so far that they kind of haven't been up to the standard people thought they would be. I know Ricky Ponting, the Delhi Capitals coach, mentioned a couple of things, but what have you made of them? Do you think that they'll be okay come the World Cup?
Certainly at this stage, it isn't as spinner friendly as I anticipated. I think a lot of talk leading to this, the World Cup, has been, you know, spin's going to be the key. Australia picked Swepson for that same reason. But no, the pace bowlers have actually been the ones who have, for the most part, been dominating. We saw Sunil Narine sort of wind back the clock and have an incredible spell. I think he actually took the wickets of Maxwell, De Villiers and Kohli in that qualifying final. But yeah, so hopefully there is a bit of spice there for the pace bowlers, but I've got no doubt that once these wickets tire, and maybe in 3 or 4 weeks' time, that it could be very spin friendly, because there's going to be a lot of games on not a lot of pitches over this next few weeks.
Well, let's look at the Australian T20 World Cup side. We've had a few of the players up for media opportunities throughout the week so far. We heard from Matthew Wade, Mitch Marsh and Ashton Agar, but Mitch Marsh is the one in particular that I kind of want to focus on. He kind of said, yeah, he's got his eyes set on that number three position, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I think I probably feel more confident just in my preparation, and that often allows me to go out there and just play the game and try and perform for the team. So I know that when I prepare really well, I go out there full of confidence, and yeah, that's certainly been the case for the last few months. So I'll continue to do that. Look, I've said a number of times now over the last few months, whatever role I'm given in this team, I'll do the best of my ability. And if that's at three, or if that's floating in the middle order, then yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, looking forward to whatever opportunity I get.
I guess, Nick, on the back of recent performances, there's no reason not to be giving Marsh that number three spot.
Yeah, it's fair to say Steve Smith hasn't earned that number three spot back. He's only played two games in the past 6 months and didn't necessarily look like he was the best number three at this stage. Mitch Marsh, obviously coming off that amazing tour to the West Indies and Bangladesh, a century back home in Australia, he deserves to be in that number three spot. And he somewhat confirmed that early this week. That does sort of mean, where does Steve Smith sit in the batting lineup? I think we both agree that he and Maxwell will both serve a sort of floating role in terms of, depending on the match situation, who will come in where. For example, if Australia lose two quick wickets in the power play, that's when you'd probably send in Steve Smith. But if Australia is maybe already got 100 on the board after the second wicket falls, that's when Maxi will probably come in for one of his swashbuckling innings. So I guess if I can't speak for you, but I'd love to see it. Warner, Finch, Marsh, Smith and Maxwell floating. And then possibly Wade 6, Agar 7, and then the bowlers from there, which means that Stoinis at this stage, still coming back from an injury, will unfortunately miss out on that first starting 11 at the least.
it's going to be really interesting to see in the couple of warm-up games that they're going to be playing over in the UAE, whether someone like a Josh Inglis can kind of push his case. But it's hard to see them not at least starting with Matthew Wade. He's obviously the incumbent. He's vice captain. He's got all these things on his side. So you'd probably imagine that he's going to play some sort of role in the T20 World Cup, but would obviously love to see Josh Inglis get involved as well. Nick, other big international news, the Ashes, they are happening as if they ever weren't, but we have an England squad to look at. I'll read it through quickly and then you can take us through some of the surprises, some of the big changes. So obviously Joe Root is there. Then we've got James Anderson, Johnny Bairstow, Dom Best, Stuart Broad, Rory Burns, Joss Butler, Zach Crawley, Hasipa Mead, Dan Lawrence, Jack Leach, David Milan, Craig Overton, Ollie Pope, Ollie Robertson, Chris Wokes and Mark Wood. Go, your key takeaways.
I guess a few things to take from it. Obviously, all of them, all those names you just listed, have played Test cricket. Most of them have been a regular in the side over the past couple of years. So in that regard, no big surprises. There's no new names. I guess the only surprise was Zach Crawley, considering he's had a pretty horrific 2021, averaging 11 with the bat in Test cricket. But I guess they do need a couple of reserve batters in that squad, so he'll be coming down under. A couple of surprise players to miss out, Dom Sibley. He obviously hasn't had the best year either, but he has been opening the batting for a couple of years or so now. So for him to miss out was a bit of a shame. And I guess Ben Foulkes, who has had another very good year, has been sort of a reserve wicketkeeper for England for a while. He's not coming down. And no wrist spinners for England either. I thought Matt Parkinson would have been at least a chance to come down, considering his stellar 2021. But no spot for him either there. I guess a couple of things, other things to point out. 10 of the players in that squad have never played a test match in Australia. And James Anderson coming back down for what I believe is his fifth Ashes tour to Australia. So a proper veteran there. And great to see him back, hopefully for one final stint at Adelaide Oval with the pink ball.
It's hard because I guess they haven't really changed their bowling side really much since the last time they toured here. But to me, it still looks like a dangerous one, especially against an Australian team that has struggled at home in the last two seasons. We can't forget that. So when you've got the experience of Anderson and Broad, and we've got someone like Chris Wokes, who is consistent and can trouble the Australian batters in certain occasions, Mark Wood, as long as he stays fit, has that kind of X factor. It's probably not at the same level as Jofra Archer, but he certainly would have the pace to trouble the Aussies. And then I guess the Aussies have never seen Ollie Robinson, so it'd be very interesting to see how he goes with ball in hand. So it's going to be interesting. I think they definitely lack a key big frontline spinner. I mean, I would have loved to have seen Parkinson in there, for example, because while you've got the likes of Jack Leach and Dom Best, who knows, they don't really strike me as massive wicket-taking components to this tour, but I think they will play a very important role nonetheless. The one thing that is very interesting, of course, is that the door is very slightly, there's a little bit of light creeping through open for Ben Stokes. I mean, we saw he posted on his Instagram and social media the other day saying he broke his finger on the 12th of April, and on the 11th of October, it was the first time since breaking his finger that he's been able to actually get his hand around a handle. And I know the England coach kind of even suggested that, yeah, we haven't completely closed off the idea of Ben coming. So even though he's not in this initial squad, there is a chance that we could see Ben Stokes these Ashes.
Oh, wouldn't it be amazing if a few weeks out from the series, ECB released a statement, Ben Stokes has joined the Ashes squad. That would just be magical. I mean, even if the dream scenario, say hypothetically, he only recovered in time to come down from the third test onward, that could also be a scenario where, depending how quickly he can recover, he only joins the second half of the series. Regardless, certainly I was excited seeing that tweet last night he sent out, as were most cricket fans in general. Look, all we can do is wish him a speedy recovery. Obviously, he's taken time away from the game, not just for that finger injury, but for his own mental health and a bit of a break from the sport. And look, just for the sake of cricket, for the sake of Ashes cricket, it would be fantastic to see him down under for this series, because he hasn't toured Australia since his debut test series in 2013-14, where he was the only English player to score a century, and he took a fifer as well, really sort of cementing his name as a future of England cricket. And, well, needless to say, he's well and truly done that. So fingers crossed, I guess. Just all the best, Ben. Get well soon.
Mm. We would absolutely love to see him down under for that series. And some more exciting news. I mean, you and I have spoken about for the last couple of weeks that it looked like the Perth test was going to be extremely unlikely. But Cricket Australia CEO Nick Hockley has spoken to a few various media outlets in the last week, including Sydney Morning Herald and the Nine newspapers, and said it, not only could it still be played in Perth, but that he holds out hope that the players' families will still be able to travel to Perth, which is kind of exciting. He said, it'd be the first Ashes test at the new stadium. It's a magnificent stadium. So we're working very actively and constructively on being able to play in Perth in a way that provides a fantastic experience for both sets of players, but also keeps the WA community safe. Our commitment is one, that we complete the tour safely, but two, that it's a fantastic experience for both squads. So there's no suggestion that families wouldn't be involved and that the discussions with the WA government have been really positive. So I guess that's exciting news.
Absolutely. I mean, we all want to see Perth get that fifth test match. The West Australian government has obviously been probably the most hardline of the states during the COVID age in terms of who can and cannot come into the state. But obviously the situation is going to change very rapidly over the next couple of months. The border restrictions we have now will almost certainly be very, very different what we see in a couple of months' time. And I guess the only thing we can really say is, if you want to see some cricket, Perth, get vaccinated. I think Perth is, or Western Australian, is one of the slowest with their COVID vaccinations at the moment. So please get the jab so you can get some cricket. That's the simple message that the West Australian government should be getting across.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, Nick, and then we'll be back with some Big Bash and Women's Big Bash news. Well, Nick, the Women's Big Bash, it starts this Thursday. Super exciting, the 7th edition of the competition. Cannot wait for it. And some really exciting news on the eve of it beginning. Ben Horn from the Daily Telegraph is reporting that our women cricketers are set to get a massive pay boost, which is exciting, that WBBL players will receive a 14% increase ahead of the new season kicking off, while the WNC players are set to get a raise of about 22% under some work done by Cricket Australia and the Australian Cricketers Association. So to put that into numbers, about $800,000 is set to go into the WNCL and $400,000 into the WBBL payments, which makes the median WBBL salary around $25,000. So fantastic to see our players rewarded. And obviously, while the WNCL was postponed to a bit later in the year and to more next year, it's good to see the commitment is still there from Cricket Australia and the Australia Cricketers Association to support these athletes.
Absolutely. I think last year the WBBL was the fourth highest viewed sporting tournament in Australia behind NRL, AFL and the BBL. So rightfully so, they should get a little pay increase as reward for that popularity. And it's only going to increase over the coming years, you anticipate. I mentioned earlier, all the games are going to be broadcast on Fox Cricket. And obviously a lot of those games will be on Channel 7's free-to-air channels as well. So, yeah, absolutely. Get involved. Get watching it. Let's continue this incredible rise of women's cricket in the country. It's been one of the best things about Australian cricket over the past 3 or 4 years, and it's only going to continue so over the next coming years as well.
Unfortunately, we do have a few players who we won't see in the early rounds of the competition. Aaron Burns, the Sydney Sixer, has pulled out of the opening stages for family and personal reasons, while Megan Shute also won't be involved in the opening rounds of the competition in Tasmania. Just obviously, she welcomed her premature, her first baby, and came prematurely. So she's just opted to stay in Adelaide to be with her family there through that, and is expected to be right for the tournament when it heads over to Adelaide and the rest of the competition. So obviously it was exciting in the last week. She has signed a new, I believe, 3-year deal with the Strikers. So good to see her staying in the blue.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously the Australian team missed her quite a bit at stages in that India series, but she'll be a big part of that Ashes, especially all the one-day games. So keen to see her hopefully back in the Strikers colours and Australian colours very, very soon. And also, Lock, one of the veterans of Australian cricket, Nicole Bolton, has announced that she will be retiring from state cricket. Mm. So she won't be involved with the West Australian side in this WNCL, but we will still see her in the Women's Big Bash. I think she's actually joined the Sydney Sixers in a move across from the Perth Scorchers. So, yeah, all the best to her in retirement. Obviously had a fantastic international career as well, a few centuries for Australia. And I believe her last innings for Western Australia was actually a century as well. So in that regard, a great way to cap off a lengthy career. And all the best to her for the future. Hopefully we see her in potentially some broadcasting roles or even some coaching sometime in the coming years.
And obviously in her statement, she spoke a little bit about kind of not feeling the desire to play cricket as much as she once did. So hopefully there's a lot of support for those players who we're going to be seeing a lot more players pulling the pin on their career and retiring soon in the women's game, because obviously the increased professionalisation really kicked off about kind of 15 years ago. So hopefully it's something that we can work through with these players to really help get them set up for life after cricket. Now, Nick, men's big bash, that kicks off a little bit later in the year, but two sort of rule changes or combined rule changes and all making news this week. Let's start off with the main one, no DRS. We didn't think it was even going to be in this season, but it's kind of been confirmed that it won't be due to the logistical issues.
Yeah, it was interesting. I thought last year Nick Hockley said that at least DRS as we know it in the international game, that will not be happening in the BBL because it's not part. I think the phrasing he said was it isn't part of the BBL's DNA, which is fair enough. I mean, we've seen in the IPL how disruptive it is. It just doesn't flow as nicely in T20 cricket. So it makes sense in that regard, but there seems to be some change of heart. They were trying to introduce some form of DRS, but unfortunately, due to primarily because of financial and border restrictions, that just wasn't going to be possible. I don't think it's the end of the world. Obviously, howlers have been a part of the game for hundreds of years. Like, their umpires will make mistakes, and we'll inevitably see a few more sometime over the few months in the BBL, but it's not the end of the world. Just fingers crossed there aren't any absolute game-changing decisions that, you know, alter who wins the title, for example, because obviously that'll dominate headlines. But there was another interesting rule that was reported, I think, first from Crick Info. Locke, do you want to talk through how this new timed out variation will go down? It hasn't been confirmed yet, but there were reportedly discussions of Cricket Australia introducing it in both the Big Bash and the Women's Big Bash.
Yes, this proposed new timeout rule to kind of stem the flow of games taking a bit too long. They want to get the batters out to the crease nice and quickly, so they've reduced the time that batters would have to come out to the crease. And if batters don't get out there in time, bowlers will get a free bowl. Is that what we want to call it? A bowling free hit, I guess, at the stumps. And it's kind of like those days of what was the cricket game you used to play, and you'd have to, it was almost like in a tee, you'd have to run around.
Oh, yes. Square cricket? Is that what it was called?
Square cricket, tee, I don't know what it was, but you know the one where it was basically like, the bowler can bowl whenever they're ready, you just have to get back to the stumps in time. And this is kind of what that's going to be like. It is bizarre. For me, the reasoning for this was, we want to speed up the game. So to speed up the game, they're potentially introducing a rule that will make the game longer. It's just not cricket. It's not cricket.
I can't see a scenario in which a batter would screw up enough that they would actually miss that 75-second cutoff. They're not up in the Lord's change rooms where they have to go through hallways and corridors and lengthy staircases. They're basically on that boundary rope the entire innings. So there's no reason they should miss that 75-second cutoff. But I do want to see it at some stage. I do want to see one batter screw up. Maybe there's a collapse and they don't have their pads on. And just to see what would it look like. It would be hilarious, but I think needless to say, we don't want this to distract from the actual competition between bat and ball. If they do introduce it, it'll be a good laugh if it does happen. But yeah, as I said before, hopefully it doesn't. Imagine if a free ball altered the outcome of a season. Imagine if it happened in a final. Oh dear, that'd be chaos.
If it was you, Nick, you got the ball in hand, you've got a free bowling hit. Are you changing how you're bowling at all? Are you trying to slow it down just to make sure you're hitting the stumps? What are you doing?
Well, I think every delivery I've bowled in the past 5 years has been seam up. I've never tried cross seam or anything like that. But if it did come to a free ball, I might have to go cross seam just because, you know, I don't want it swinging over towards the leg side and missing the ball. But what about yourself, Locke, with your consistent line and length? What would you be doing?
Getting the underarm out for sure.
Oh no, not again.
No, it would be very interesting to see. I think a case where it could be really likely and would be controversial is imagine it's a hat-trick ball because there's chaos in the dressing room. Players don't know. Two wickets fall and two balls. Someone's not quite ready. They walk out to the middle. Does it still count as a hat-trick if it's a free bowling hit at the third wicket? If they just get a free shot at the stumps, imagine if that's the way someone brings up their hat-trick.
I think it would still go down as a timed-out dismissal, and I don't think that goes on the bowler's record. So I feel like, no, unfortunately not. But, yeah, I'm honestly, this is just speculation. We don't know exactly what the laws are going to be. But my gut feeling is it wouldn't go down on the bowler's record, that timed-out wicket.
Very interesting. Well, I know someone who won't be getting timed out this summer, and I would certainly not be bowling underarm to. That is Cameron Green. A video of his return to WA Premier Cricket went a little bit viral overnight as he decided to spank the living daylights out of some opposition bowlers playing for Subiaco. And yeah, he only scored 57 off 81, but let's play it a bit now. Have a listen to the sound of some of these shots off the bat of Cameron Green. I think for me, what makes that video are two things. The sort of polite applause, as if they just haven't seen one of the most incredible shots those people have ever witnessed in their lives. And also Cameron Green's lack of just being like, all right, I'll go bump fists with the guy down the other end. I guess I'll acknowledge you.
Yeah. And how long did it take for it to finally land on the roof of a neighbor's house down the road? A question for you, should Cameron Green be over in the UAE right now? Should he be in that T20 squad?
No, I think he will be in the T20 squad in years to come. I'm happy with the balance at the moment. I think I'd rather him sort of establish himself as an Australian cricketer before we try throwing him into too many formats at once. I think, yeah. What about you?
If he had a bit more T20 match experience, if he, for example, had been sent over to the West Indies and Bangladesh and had put on a few impressive scores, in hindsight, maybe they should have. I mean, the batting was woeful, so... maybe he should have gone over there, but regardless, yeah, he hasn't played enough T20 cricket recently to warrant heading over there. But then again, none of the Australian players have played a lot of T20 cricket recently.
The last thing we have to touch on this week is quite a remarkable post that went on LinkedIn. I mean, you and I both know who this was, but I'll read it, and I think most people listening will probably guess which figure in Australian cricket this might be. A wise man once said, "Don't give them a taste of your own medicine. If they lied, let their medicine be honesty. If they played with your emotions, let your medicine be maturity. If they broke you, let your medicine heal you. If they made you cry, let your medicine make them smile. These remedies of yours may take years to work, but they work and they last. So be patient. Stay true to yourself. And remember this, it is better for people to value who you are, not who you pretend to be. Who you are lasts a lifetime. Who you pretend to be changes like the change of seasons. Don't be afraid to be yourself, even if it means removing yourself from lives you want to be in. You are, no doubt, worthy of being valued for who you are. So be who you are." The wise man says, "Be yourself. You are unique and you are special. Be happy, be healthy, be calm, be strong, and be yourself," accompanied by a photo of someone on a chair smoking. No, that is not Steve Smith. That is Justin Langer.
Lock, have you ever considered doing voices for audiobooks?
Maybe I should. Maybe if JL ever writes a book about his time in charge, I'll have to do that one.
Well, I'm putting your name down for the audiobook vocals for Justin Langer's autobiography, which inevitably will drop in a couple of years.
Thank you. But yeah, a bit of a weird post, that one, from JL, who's probably quarantining at the moment with the Australian squad in the UAE. Anything we should read into that one, you think, Nick?
Oh, look, he did say once there were these reports of a bit of unrest among the Australian camp earlier this year, he did sort of come out at one stage and say he's not going to change his coaching style, he's not going to change how he leads this Australian side. And I think this is sort of echoing those comments in some regard, but I don't want to read too much into it. It's an inspirational quote. It's something a mum would post to their Facebook. So it's just, you know, JL, he's a strange man. He's a very lovable man, and no doubt he'll be focused very much on getting Australia through this T20 World Cup. hopefully progressing through the final series and then shifting focus quickly to the Ashes.
Without a doubt. And we will be shifting our focus towards some of these tournaments coming up soon. Cannot wait to watch all this cricket that's happening. Obviously, more Shield Marsh Cup coming up this week as well, along with the IPL finals. Nick, thank you as always for joining me, my good man.
Lock, it is a pleasure. I'll speak to you very soon.
I'll catch you all next week.